There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You know, I'll never forget it. It was so crystal clear. It was like a third eye vision. It was pin sharp. And I walked over to the mirror and I was just pure light. It was just extraordinary. And I just started to levitate. I just started to lift off. We're moving into a completely different era because the frequency is changing. We are raising our consciousness, but we are being helped by cosmic ingredients, solar flares, photonic light. We're being helped by the cosmic winds, but we are doing it together in real Aquarian style. It's very interesting that the outer planets are all moving from heavy, slow signs of water and earth into air and fire. And I can feel it in myself, and I know other people can, of the speed of our evolution. You know, I just think we're on the brink of something absolutely gigantic in understanding our reality and our consciousness. We are going to reconnect to our galactic families in a bigger way than we have done in eons. The moment our Earth is moving through a particular area of space where it moves every 12,000 years, give or take 500, where we move through the what's known as the photon belt. And these are very concentrated, high frequency energies that we absorb. They're absorbed by the Earth and they're absorbed by us. And they essentially help us to birth the light body, to shed density, to shift from carbon to crystalline. So we've got that going on. We have many astrological indicators as well. We have planets leaving, the outer planets particularly, leaving signs and re-entering others. Over 3 years, from 2023 to 2026, we have Saturn changing sign. Obviously, it does that fairly regularly. We have Uranus. We have Neptune. We have Pluto. Also, if you're looking at the dwarf planets, which are another octave of consciousness, and that's another indicator of this evolutionary shift, you've got several of those actually changing sign, and they have very long orbits of normally around about 300 years. So Manwe has just changed sign. Sedna, which has an 11,400-year orbit, has just literally entered Gemini, just starting to enter Gemini. And that is huge. I mean, 11,400 years. And that's really indicating not just a transformation, but a metamorphosis for humanity. And so what we're really looking at is energy, physics, cosmology, astrology. And also, you know, if we look at ancient prophecies, the ancient Hopi prophecy very much talks about this time. And I think many of us, frankly, can simply feel it. If we look also at something like the solar cycles, we have an 11-year sunspots at a solar cycle. And we're currently in solar cycle 25. And that has been pulled back into 2024 as its peak. It was supposed to peak in 2025. We are going through an absolutely extraordinary level of solar flares right now. I mean, in the last 36 hours, I think we've had something like 13 M-class flares and 3 X-class flares in the last 36 hours. If you go back to 2018, we didn't have a single M-class flare the whole year. That's how different it is. So if we're looking at the, so we're looking at the ingredients for our evolution, we've got this very high frequency plasma, essentially, that we're experiencing and absorbing and assimilating, going through the photon belt. And then the other set of influences are the solar flares that are bringing information from very far places in space. And both of those are key evolutionary ingredients for our evolution. And then you put that together with the astrology, and also, you know, we dive deep into the archetypes of the astrology that are changing sign. That speaks of metamorphosis as well. But I think, frankly, we're all just feeling it, that we're becoming more psychically sensitive, more telepathic, more sensitive to nature, more loving, want to come together as one humanity. We have a greater sense of one consciousness. And so, and it's fast, Amrit, it's so fast. And I will let you speak in a minute, but, you know, for instance, a month or so ago, I was sort of struggling, as many, many people were and still are, with sleep issues because of the solar flares, because you feel you're either plugged into the mains or you're exhausted, but you can't sleep. You know, so chronic fatigue, but also insomnia at the same time. So it was very disruptive to sleep because there's no dress rehearsal in how we absorb these completely unfamiliar solar flare energies. And yet, even a month on from that, I can sleep through 3 X-class flares and all these M-class flares like a baby. So somehow there's been a shift, unconsciously, a shift for me and many other people, that what was once disruptive, if we're able to raise our frequency, becomes surfing of a wave, because we are upshifting in our frequency as like bodies, essentially.
There is so much I want to tap into, and I think even just there's some really nifty curiosity points I've got there around the dwarf planets and the different archetypes in particular. But before we do, at the risk of being that guy, the difference between metamorphosis and transformation, because in this space we talk about transformation a lot, and yet you specifically dive, it seems like you dig a little bit deeper to get to the word metamorphosis, and you consciously choose that word. Can you help me understand why and what the difference between transformation and metamorphosis is for you specifically, please, Pam, before we dive in deeper?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know how much astrology you know, Amrit, maybe some, but if I think of a planet like Pluto, the archetype of Pluto is death, rebirth, and transformation. So it's like a tree. An analogy I often use, it's like a tree that dies, falls in a wood, rots down, and then that becomes fertile soil for new life. And so that's a kind of transformative process, but it's a kind of fairly logical process, if you like. With a planet like Sedna, and Pluto, as you probably know, has recently moved into Aquarius, essentially for another 20 years. So that's been a change in sign, and Pluto has a 248-year cycle, but it is in direct aspect to trine to Sedna. Sedna, the myth of Sedna, was that she was an Inuit goddess, and she, the variations in the myth, but one aspect of the myth certainly is that she was kind of sold off by her father into an inappropriate marriage, and so he gained financial reward, essentially, for, you know, selling his daughter into that marriage. And she was very abused in that marriage, and eventually she was so unhappy her father came to rescue her in a canoe. A big storm blew up, and to save himself, her father threw her out of the canoe. She tried to hang on with her fingers. It's not a great story. Tried to hang on with her fingers, and he chopped her fingers off. He doesn't come out of this world. You know, if we're thinking about the patriarchy, and, you know, selling on daughter, as it were, for material reward, sovereignty issues, and also betrayal of the patriarchy, saving self, service to self versus service to others. Anyway, Sedna in the myth floated down, because she couldn't save herself. She floated down to the deep, and her fingers transformed into beautiful sea creatures of turtles and whales and dolphins. So that, I would say, is the difference. She became a completely different species, turtles, whales, dolphins. And so that's, it's a bigger jump than transformation, and it's a complete metamorphosis into a different species. And that's what I think humanity is going through right now. We're at the beginning of that journey of a transformation of species into homo luminous, homo galacticus, I want to say.
Yeah, it's thank you so much for sharing that. And I honestly, I'll just say it now, please don't hold back any of the punches on the myths, because listening to you share about mythology is just beyond fascinating. Like, it's, and I remember listening into, I can't remember which video of yours it was, but it was describing the roots of astrology in some way. And it's currently dated to where Mesopotamia, but maybe it goes back even further, and likely it does. But you were describing, like, we didn't have TVs. So can you tell us a little bit about, I'll just leave it there and then you can pick it up. Like, that was so gorgeous to think about.
Yeah, I mean, in recorded history, it is said that it began really with the birth of, and this is very much, I think, our current paradigm, seeing it this way, ancient Mesopotamia, the birth of civilization, when writing and that kind of thing started, you know, arithmetic started to begin. But because the people 6,000 years ago in ancient Mesopotamia, which sadly now is modern day Iraq, they didn't have televisions, computers, any of that. So they were just open to the skies. So that was their entertainment, watching the planets move around the skies. And they told each other stories about the gods that lived on the planets. But they were highly, you know, highly observant in how they noted the movements of the planets. And those stories are the myths that I use every day today, 6,000 years on, as my bread and butter astrology, which is just mind-blowing, isn't it? Absolutely. So thank you to them. I think it is way, way older than that, because if you follow the work of Robert Edward Grant, I don't know if you've seen, at Christmas he took a trip out to the King's Chamber with a group of people, and he was actually able to see the zodiac signs written around the inside, the walls, etchings on the walls of the King's Chamber. Now, they are estimated, those pyramids, and also, you know, I'll go on to something else in a minute, but those pyramids are estimated to be at least 13,000 years old, and possibly even a whole processional cycle before that, another, you know, 24, 25,000 years before that. And because whoever built those pyramids clearly wrote them in the language of astronomy and astrology. A, the etchings of the zodiac signs in the correct order are around the King's Chamber. Secondly, as you probably know, and this is the work of Graham Hancock and Robert Duval, if you fly above the pyramids, they're two big pyramids and one smaller offset. It's only when you fly above them that you realize they're a perfect mirror to the Belt of Orion. So because of that configuration of how they were built and the etchings inside the King's Chamber, it suggests that these beings were galactic beings who came from out there. They weren't writing in Chinese or Spanish. They were writing in the language of the galaxy, of the constellations and the astrology. So I think it's way beyond 6,000 years. I think all of my astrology could be upturned like an apple cart any day now. I think we're moving into big times of paradigm shift. So, but they're very exciting times we're moving into, of new discoveries.
It's so, it's such a shift to hear you describe astrology as a language. And the, like, I think even in the story you alluded to, I think if we just pause for a quick sec to allow that to just sink in for people, because you've made it, it's like you we were discussing earlier, like you've got some French under your belt. And then it's like understanding French is much the same as, like, okay, not obviously one for one, but like if you can learn to speak another language, astrology is just another language. And actually, well, does, I can't even say it predates time, but like in that way, people knew that people would be staring at the heavens forever. And if we wanted to communicate something through to them, the cosmology will always be there for them to reflect upon.
Yes, and it's a universal language. There's no division. It's a universal language. And also, yeah, thank you for bringing up that point, Amrit, because I used to speak fairly good French. It's now drivel. But I remember when I was learning French, that clunking of the translation in my head was the same clunking I got when I was learning astrology. You know, this means that kind of thing. But as you become more fluent either in French or astrology, it flows like music. But I think the key difference, I would say, with any language like French, Spanish, whatever, you get to a point where you say, yep, I'm fluent, I can speak like a local, I've got all the colloquial language, and it's finite. You know, I now speak it perfectly. I can never say I speak astrology perfectly. I learn something new every single day, even after lifetimes of doing this, and I know I've had other lifetimes doing this. I can never say, okay, I've cracked it, I know it all. It is an endless journey. I learn something every day, and particularly at the moment. I mean, it's kind of over the jumps, you know, new stuff coming in every day. So it's immensely exciting and way more complex than learning just a regular foreign language, because it's so infinite.
Yeah, there's some part of me that always remarks upon that. It's like some of my favorite pastimes, meditation. At what point are you a master? Like, you know, you're never master. you just keep going, and just more stuff keeps opening up to you. Music is another one of those things. It's just like, do you clock music? And it's like mathematics, another one of those things. It's like, do you clock mathematics? And it's like, no, you just keep learning more and more and more. And it seems like astrology, as you're alluding to it here, is just another one of those things. It almost seems like all the things that are profoundly sacred actually are on an infinite time scale, would you say?
Yeah, I really feel that. We have so much to learn, Amrit. And, you know, the ancient civilizations were way ahead of us. I mean, even the way they built the pyramids. And you know, Machu Picchu, I saw a documentary some years ago. They were trying to replicate the building of Machu Picchu with sort of diamond cutters and lasers. And they couldn't do it as well as it was built, you know, all those thousands of years ago. They couldn't get a knife blade in between the stones. So we are barbarians in our supposedly sophisticated civilization today. I think we're, even the animals and the trees are ahead of us, you know. We're playing catch up. So those ancient civilizations have so much to teach us. And, you know, one theory about the Egyptian pyramids is that they certainly weren't rolled, you know, with slaves being whipped at, you know, it's just bonkers. One theory is that the stones were actually made molten, made more malleable, like plasticine, and pushed together. So they're perfectly, perfectly aligned, so you can't get a knife blade in between. And that's how the measurements are so absolutely precise. And possibly that's how the etchings happened. You know, if we look at the beautiful work of Veda Austin, where, you know, her thought becomes imprinted as the crystal in the water. If the stones were actually molten, could you imprint thought, i.e. the zodiac signs, inside the king's chamber? That's one theory. I mean, we don't know. But it would certainly give one explanation. However they did it, they're way ahead of where we are now in all of our cleverness, modern cleverness.
Well, then that also brings me to one of the points, because it does seem like, as you were saying, we ain't, like in ancient times there was, I don't know where all this power comes from, but there's all this power and there's all this knowledge and there's all this ability. And then we've moved through a period, and yet you were alluding to before, like psychic abilities are starting to wake up in people. They're becoming more sensitive to nature. There's a sense of oneness. Even like, I'm just humble old me, and I know a few people now that have actually popped through to the other side, to this non-dual aware state. And I'm like, what? You're just walking around in the non-dual space. And they're just like, yeah, and they describe it effortlessly. I'm just like, what? You just see yourself as one with everything? Like, yeah, you're me and I'm you. And I'm like, what is, and like, I don't know this for a fact, but I can imagine it's why so many people traveled to India, was to probably find a few people back in the day that were in that state. And yet in my humble little circle, I know a few people already. And I'm like, times must certainly be a changing. And so things are coming back online. Is that the way to frame it? Even I'm surprised I've said it that way. How would you articulate it? Like, can you explain? Like, because things have happened and then we're here, and then things are sort of re-emerging as well. Are we reclaiming some of our gifts from the past potentially?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's what I believe, 100%. It's happening already. It's happening. Sort of lots to say about that. I just had an idea to run a very simple, well, I'm not running it, actually. We're all running it because I don't want to claim leadership. And, you know, it's truly Aquarian. We are all leaders. On 15 minutes on a Sunday night, 7 p.m. UK time, not a great time for Australia and New Zealand, sadly, but it works for the rest of the world. And you just join energetically and, you know, step into love, joy, compassion, gratitude, see. But it's really to magnetize in New Earth, to see New Earth as abundant, shimmering, and that we are one. We are one. People are having, I've just been so humbled and blown away. People are having the most incredible experiences of oneness, that we are coming together. We are connected with our hearts in a kind of spinning vortex. And that becomes a light, a web of light that was just becoming bigger and bigger. Some people are kind of bounced out to the far galaxy and can see Earth as this spinning web of light, and our heart energy is just expanding and expanding. So even in those little 15-minute meditations, it's such a simple idea, people are starting to experience this sense of oneness. And it's something that I'm particularly fascinated by ancient Lemuria, because Lemuria, as we understand it, was one of the most perfect civilizations on Earth, and they lived in this sense of oneness. They were fully connected to nature. They respected all animals. They would never kill for food in that way. And there was a beautiful sense of harmony between each other, with the trees, the birds, the animals, nature. Everything was right relationship. Everything was right balance. And I'm particularly fascinated with that at the moment, because I have a very strong sense that the frequency, at least, and possibly some of the ancient land masses where Lemuria was, are going to start to reemerge. And it's very interesting. My good friend, astrologer Heather Ensworth in the US, just a few days ago, interviewed a chap called Keone Hanulai, who comes from that lineage of Mu. And he said the reason that ancient Lemuria disappeared was not simply the flooding, because Hawaii is the mountaintop that's left from ancient Lemuria land. It wasn't simply the flooding. It's because we fell from love. And love is the frequency of Lemuria. And as we step back into love, and that's what you're doing in your work, Amrit, and I'm trying to do in mine, as we step back into love as one consciousness, one unity of humanity, the land masses will start to reemerge, because they haven't disappeared. We are just in a different frequency from them. It's like being in a haunted house. One person can see the ghost, the other can't. So that he was saying the land masses are still there. It's just because as humanity, we've fallen from love that we can't see them. Isn't that amazing? I mean, that is
beyond incredible.
So that's why I believe we will see, you know, there's a gigantic mountain range that's just been discovered a month or so back that nobody knew about, off the coast of Chile. So, and this is very Saturn in Pisces as well. It's very Homer as well, dwarf planet, that land will start to reemerge from the sea right now, that will have new life in it, all kinds of new species they've discovered on this underwater gigantic mountain range near to Chile. So new species emerging, new algae that we haven't known before. I think a lot of new medicines will come from the sea as well. So we're moving into a completely different era, because the frequency is changing. And we as humanity are doing that. Nobody's coming to save us. There's no Deus Ex Machina or chap on a white stallion. We are doing it. We are raising our consciousness, but we are being helped by cosmic and physical ingredients, solar flares, photonic light. We're being helped by the cosmic winds, but we are doing it together in real Aquarian style.
So many questions in there. One of the low-hanging fruit ones is, just the concept of land masses emerging, water potentially reclining as we fall back up into love, which I probably shouldn't use the word fall, but rise back up into love is probably the way I should articulate that. And the concept of land masses emerging and more biodiversity sort of coming back. And this comes back to that, the question where I started about reclaiming. It's really interesting because you look around, and from a science sort of level. There is so much, you know, the water levels are rising, cities around the world will be submerged, and yet this is potentially where we see transformation and metamorphosis at work, I imagine. And that's I think we don't hear the other side of, you know, what is sort of breaking down to break through. We often hear about the breakdown, but we don't hear a lot potentially about what we're breaking through into. You did mention, and this is one of my, it's a meditation of mine, but I came across it somewhere in my path, but it was someone said this quote that we're here to exhume part of the humus part of being human. We're now sort of stepping into this lumen being era, and I heard you say luminous galactic before, and just really resonated really deeply with me. And it just reflects a lot to me in terms of, for me, it's a bit of a, and I'm not sure if it's meant to be, but it's an enforcer of morality in some way. But maybe that's unnecessary, but it just is what it does for me, that sort of concept of, oh, we're luminous. Like we actually can see right through each other. Yeah. You know, like, you know.
Be able to read people's energy. Yeah, you can see it straight away.
Right. And so I'd love to get your thoughts on, yeah, just these light bodies that are being formed, because you've had some really interesting dreams around it as well, and what is emerging in that space as well, because I think there's a lot of hope in what you're sharing actually at this particular juncture in the conversation specifically.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've talked about it several times and, you know, I'll never forget it. It was so crystal clear. It was like a third eye vision rather than a, you know, my eyesight isn't that good, but in this dream, it was pin sharp. It was at the end of the night, and in the dream, I walked into this empty room that was just filled of sparkly pink and peach light. Nothing in the room apart from a mirror, and I walked over to the mirror, and I was just pure light. I was just the light body. I remember my eyes particularly, they were just filled with light. It was just extraordinary, and I just started to levitate. I just started to lift off. And then the alarm went off, which was incredibly annoying. But it was so clear, I'll never forget. But it wasn't just a promise for me, it was a promise for everyone that this is what we're moving towards. So we're shedding density. And it's very interesting that the outer planets are all moving from heavy, slow signs of water and earth into air and fire. And from this point on, life is going to move fast. Life is going to move really quickly because air and fire are both very speedy. And I can feel it in myself, and I know other people can, of the speed of our evolution is really going to start to pick up so rapidly. And I think we have to use our discernment, because there's going to be an awful lot coming at us that may seem novel, and this is particularly in the kind of technology area, that novel and convenient, and I can buy my train ticket faster or do my shopping faster if I have this little, you know, XYZ in me. I think we just have to think very strategically and long term, because as I see it, at least for a period of time, there's a kind of bifurcation. There are those people who are very dedicated to creating love, harmony, togetherness, on a very natural and organic path, and you know, very sort of remembrance of our relationship with nature. And there are other people who may be excited by the technology, but it's a much more synthetic path, if you like, fork in the road. And we choose those individually. Nobody forces any of us onto either path. We choose the fork in the road by our frequency. We self-select them. And so, but I think for those people that certainly I like to spend my life with, and hopefully, you know, follow my videos, there is so much hope. There's more hope now, even though the world seems very grim, than there has ever been for humanity. That's my feeling. If you watch the nightly news, you'll think that woman, Pam Gregory, is just full of, you know, fairy tale gossamer. You know, they would, because the nightly news is full of drama, colour, fearful stuff, scary stuff. We know that. I've got a plant there now instead of a television, but don't watch the news. because you're, even if you think you're not taking it in, you're kind of in a slightly submissive state. You know, it's very easy for that information to hypnotize you and take your frequency down, which of course could perhaps be the purpose of it. So stay awake, focus on what you want. Focus on simple stuff that brings you joy, because you will magnify those things in your life that bring you joy. Laughing with a friend, hugging a tree, listening to the bird, you know, I'm a simple bumpkin. I'm not a complex being. You know, it's the simple stuff that everybody can do. But if more of us did that, then life would be much more joyful day to day. We wouldn't be talking about the gloom and doom. We'd be hugging and laughing and coming together. And what can we create? Can we find some land to grow some vegetables together? You know, it's a totally different mindset, I think, of we're not waiting, we're creating. That's the mindset. We're not waiting, we're creating. We're coming together as one humanity. We are not going to make a pig's ear of the biggest evolutionary jump that's being offered to humanity right now. It's a fantastic, but it's moving quickly. You know, you've got to get aboard the train quickly.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe. I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart. And it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast. You're referring to choice there, and there's so much to be discussed around choice, because one of the layperson's observations of astrology is this massive sense of fatedness that arrives. And I could have opened today's podcast asking you the question of, hey, what's one of the things about mainstream astrology that sort of irks you the most? just going to throw that on the table there. and just allow you to unpack it, because the concept of you speaking so deeply to choice, because the question could have also easily been, how do we integrate more and more of our light bodies into being? But everything you referred to was simple and choose. And I think we do know the simple things, actually, because they are the simple things for a reason. But choice, and hearing yourself refer to choice, for some of those people tuning in to yourself for the first time, might actually be a bit bit jarring. Can you help us clear that out and clear
that's
it up?
Great question. I'm really glad you asked that, Amrit. Really glad. Astrology increases your choice, not decreases it. It increases it. And because I am, you know, I have never, ever in all of my years of doing astrology ever referred or practiced sun sign astrology ever, because it's like taking all the symphonies of Bach or Beethoven and reducing them to an advertising jingle. If it was that simple, it wouldn't have taken me all these years to become competent. And I consider myself competent, no more than that, because I'm still learning. But it's so much more complex than that. But it's the two analogies I've often used is that your birth chart is like your unique sheet of music. It's pure potential, but you have latitude in your free will in terms of how you play that. Or it's like your modeling set of plasticine, as we call it in the UK, modeling clay. And again, it's unformed. It's up to you. The sheet of music is perhaps a better analogy, because you have a unique pattern to work with in this lifetime. And the sheet of music is very clear about that unique pattern, but it's up to us how we play it. And having done so many charts in my life and seeing how often people have quite similar charts, they're born similar time and geography, and seeing how one person has lived it out and how another person has lived it out. And that's their soul contract and down to their choices. But it's very interesting in terms of the magnitude of how they can bring the archetypes to life. That latitude of choice, that latitude of free will, I think is considerable. And I really, 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 in all my work, want to get beyond astrology being fated. Because if you think planets do things to us, you are right into victim consciousness, aren't you? You're straight to, you know, the last thing I want is to put people into fear and victim consciousness. And if that's how you view astrology, don't follow astrology. What I'm saying is these are giving us strategic tools, because it's explaining the cosmic winds for particular periods of time, when it's most appropriate to go for an opportunity, or where it's a time where it's, you know, it's better to work hard, keep your head down, then you get your reward at the end, whether it's giving you a time of big evolutionary jump, which can be individual as well as collective. So it's like a cosmic weather forecast. And so if you watch the cosmic weather forecast and you know there's a big rainstorm coming, you now have a better informed choice of what clothes do I wear today? Or do I even go out? Do I stay at home and avoid the rainstorm? Or do I take my umbrella and my rubberware and go out in it? But at least I have a more informed choice than if I hadn't watched the cosmic weather forecast. So I kind of view it in that way, that it enhances choice. And it really, for me, is not just a practical framework for life. It really helps to take us to a soul level, in what the purpose of this incarnation is for each person. And I feel that, and I did a deep dive when I wrote my second book about the nodes of the moon, because they're very prominent in Indian astrology, but at the time, it's very little. You know, when I was learning astrology, nobody ever talked about the nodes, ever. So that can really help to give you your compass needle for your soul's path of growth in this lifetime, deeper level than the personality. So it's so powerful. And I feel that when astrology is seen as fated, it makes it so small. And it makes the person's consciousness shrink into victim. It's a tool for empowerment. I'm a warrior for this.
I absolutely love it. There's also something going on at the moment with, I think you said Chiron, and actually victim consciousness is actually being, the analogy I kind of got, you didn't use these words, but it's kind of being scooped up out of us at the moment is kind of the vibe that I picked up. But yeah, maybe you can articulate that a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting. Particularly people who've been born since around the 1960s, because Chiron has quite a long orbit, sort of 52 years, they would be born with Chiron in Aries. Now, the sign where Chiron sits in your chart is your original wound in this lifetime. And the key words for Aries is I am. I am. I have a clear sense of self. I know who I am. I know my center. I exist. People with strong Aries energy tend to live in the present moment. You know, they're just very simple, very clear. I know who I am. fine. But the wound, if you have Chiron in Aries, if you've been born since, yeah, sort of mid-60s, they would have Chiron in Aries. So the early wound would be in the I am. And to translate that, very often in early life, those people feel, I don't have a right to exist. For either family reasons or cultural reasons, I don't have a right to exist. I believe Gandhi, I'm pretty certain Gandhi, a great Indian leader, he had Chiron in Aries. And you can see culturally with the great British Empire why he would feel, I don't have a right to exist. And yet that is meant to be turned into leadership. And what has been happening over the last few months, and it's still pretty much exact, yeah, it's very close, but it's been Chiron, the transiting North Node and transiting Chiron have been together. And so therefore, the transiting North Node collectively is our collective path for soul's growth. And the collective path for soul's growth right now in recent months has been, let us purge that sense of I don't have a right to exist. And particularly around the total solar eclipse in Aries, on the 19th of 19 degrees of Aries, and that was on the 8th of April, that was an amazing opportunity for people to purge this victim consciousness, particularly oddly if you lived in America, because I'm trying to explain this sort of simply without getting lost in the weeds, because transiting Chiron was coming back to 1776 Chiron position, which was the birth time, the 4th of July, 1776, birth time for the US. So particularly for people in America who'd been born from kind of mid-60s onwards, they particularly might have felt that sense of I am purging and I'm stepping into my power. I know many people felt I'm shedding karma, I'm shedding emotional baggage, I'm shedding that victim consciousness, I'm stepping into my sovereignty, I'm stepping into my power. It's been a real energetic shift since 8th of April. Sorry, I will try and keep the
something
answer
shorter. No, please don't. No, seriously, please don't. Also the interesting thing about the Age of Aquarius, you said, is like the others will become the leaders. And I'm thinking back to what you were referring to. I know Gandhi was a little bit earlier, but also just how odd he was, you know, in so many ways, in the way that he approached things. And the more you read about him, actually, the story ends up actually being a bit sad, because he actually wanted to liberate South Africa, but he ended up liberating India, which was actually quite profound, in that you may set out to do your life's work and many great goods can come from that, and yet you may not feel entirely fulfilled in your dharma, and yet, you know, your time and service is always what your time and service was meant to be, despite what your 3D focus may be at any given time, actually. A lot to learn from Gandhi's story, so many things. But I wanted to use that as a bit of a segue, because you were touching before on your second book about the nodes, and you mentioned the North Node and its orientation for us collectively as well. And there just is this really, I guess I just wanted to romanticize around the Indian culture with you for a quick moment, because it's still one of these places which maybe it's a bit more sun sign astrology, but nonetheless, people won't marry. They might be completely in love, but they won't marry if their charts don't line up. It's like this really trippy-dippy culture where it's like, now's not a good time to start a business. I have to start like 2 years from now or like 3 months from now, because my chart, you know, such and such is here and such is there. I can't be doing it. And so they hold this awareness of astrology very deeply within their collective zeitgeist, and it's present pretty much at all times. You know, it's like people ask about, oh, such and such are getting married, and like, oh, did they get their charts done? You know, it's like, it's almost like the very next question. And it's like, oh yeah, they were a good match. You know, they had this in this house and this in that house. And it's like, oh, fantastic. Very good for them. How auspicious. You know? It's like on your merry way. And so it's just this really interesting reflection for me personally, just seeing, yeah, how much, because certain people I'm aware, even tuning into this podcast, might believe that astrology is complete codswallop, you know. And then there's other people that are refusing to get married to someone they care so much about based on something that is like, you know, written in the stars. And just that, just the human experience and the, I guess, the polarities between those two places when it comes to something that is, yeah, so, well, for me, it feels like it's an...
Can I jump in there, Amrit? Yeah. Otherwise, I'll sort of lose the thought because, you know, I see where you're going and that's terrific. And people who think it's codswallop, if we think it is simply a language, you don't say French is codswallop, Spanish is codswallop. It's just a language. It's not what you believe in. It's got nothing to do with belief. It's just a language. It's a way of cutting through reality and seeing it from a different point of view. That's all it is. There's nothing to believe in or not believe in. There's no religion attached to it. So I just wanted to kind of make that point because that's always my answer to people say, oh, you know, what you do is a load of bunk. Well, thanks very much. But, you know, it's just a language. So and also to the point about the Indian arranged marriage, that's really interesting too, because this is going to sound completely heretical for an astrologer to say, but I think as we evolve, and I'm seeing it in people now, we evolve beyond the chart softens. The chart softens and we evolve beyond some of the drama of what we may have experienced earlier in life. You know, if we have Pluto transits, Uranus transits, they can be quite dramatic. They can be life-changing when they happen. You know, you can leave marriages or whatever. As time goes on, and particularly people who are on a spiritual path, seem to go beyond their charts. Their charts are still playing out in events in their life, but everything becomes softened, if you know what I mean. And you know, I mean, Mercury retrograde is the classic one. There's so much hype about Mercury retrograde. You know, stop your life 3 weeks, three times a year. Don't sign a contract. Don't drive. You know, but there's such an entrenched belief system about everything will go wrong during Mercury retrograde. Surprise, surprise, things go wrong because that's our belief filter. Well, I was born with Mercury retrograde. You can clearly see in this interview, it hasn't stopped me communicating. Try and stop me communicating. So, you know, it's just we mustn't include or make astrology more fated than it's ever meant to be. And I think that's the Mercury retrograde suffers from that. But it's interesting about the Indian arranged marriages, because I think they do operate with the nodes. One thing that was quite a theme in the book and I've developed since is that for sure, when we meet people where they have important planets and or their nodal axis matches yours, boy, there's a feeling of I have known you for 1,000 years. I've known you for 1,000 years. Even though the outside packaging may appear to be completely wrong for you. I mean, when I, very first time I met my husband-to-be, and he absolutely, you know, judging by anyone who knew me, thought, what? But there was such a sense of, yes, and it did turn out to be a what, but there was such a sense of, I have known you for 1,000 years. I know we've had past lives together. I absolutely knew, and could, you know, remember some of those. And the dance had to go on. The dance had to be completed and the wounds released and that, you know, that pattern closed with that soul, as it were. And so the nodal axis for me is the deepest part of the chart that certainly has resonance with past lives and relationships from past lives. And very often it's when things still need to be resolved within that soul pattern that you re-encounter, you remarry that person to resolve that. That's been my experience of it with myself and clients.
Hey there, Inspired Tribe. Just quickly jumping in here to invite you to please subscribe to the channel. At the time of this recording, only 90% of you that are watching this video for a second or a third time are actually subscribed. It helps us power positivity into the world like nothing else. It is your subscription that does that. So please take a moment to find the button. It's down here somewhere, right there or there. Please hit subscribe. Back to today's episode. It's quite profound as I start to visualize some of the, I don't know, I see it as in bands almost, like there's the pure potential that is us, and then we step down into this like quantum probability, and then we emerge in this like 3D reality to play some of it out. And I'm not sure if that's correct even, but it's kind of what visually arrives for me. Maybe you can speak to that and help me clear up some of the stuff. I've got it a bit muddled.
Yeah, Amrit, thank you. Because I think I even, as part of a video, I mentioned that yes, I think, you know, we have infinite potential in the universe for sure. And when we incarnate into this particular life, we've then got this particular unique birth chart. And that steps down the infinite probability, a possibility, into a set of probabilities. You know, for instance, I was unlikely to be an astronaut or an engineer because I have no Earth in my chart. So I'm terribly impractical. It's quite funny. It's almost a dyslexia, how impractical I am. But, you know, that's fine. That's why I am. So it steps down from infinite potential into sets of probabilities that show your gifts, your strengths, your challenges for this lifetime. And then, yes, we then take those archetypal patterns and we turn it into a life as we move through our lives. And particularly as we grow up and become more conscious, it's our frequency interweaving with those pillars of meaning, those archetypes of meaning that produces our lives. That's how I see it. So I absolutely see it as you describe it, as a stepping down from, you know, quantum soup, infinite possibilities, into specific patterns of probabilities for this incarnation, and then the manifestation of how we live that through our frequency. Yeah.
Okay, so we've expanded the conversation around what astrology is and also what Pam's interests are. And so from there, even before we started today's podcast, you're like, oh, Amrit, I've been researching and going down some interesting rabbit holes. And not to put you on the spot, but I'd love to sort of just explore candidly what are some of the things you're researching and what are some of the curious little rabbit holes you find yourself down these days?
Yeah, I'm just way out in space at the moment. I'm just at the beginning of two rabbit holes that I know will connect, these two rabbit holes. And they haven't connected yet, but I know they will, because when I'm sort of electrified, I know I've got to follow that. One is about the heart. The heart, as we know now, isn't a pump. If you listen to Dr. Thomas Cowan talk about this, it's not a pump, it's a vortex. You know, so many things in nature are vortices, aren't they? But to move beyond the kind of pink puffy Valentine's card romance, the heart is our largest electromagnetic organ. And therefore, I believe our heart is actually our connection to the cosmos. Lee Harris has talked about this with the Z's. When he was channeling the Z's, it was just that one phrase, that it's our connection to the cosmos. But I actually think it's an electromagnetic, you know, scientific electromagnetic connection between our individual hearts and the cosmos. And there's something that's also linked to the birth chart with that, our unique signature. And in addition, what I'm exploring is, and I'm just, again, at the beginning of this rabbit hole, is water. I think water is more primary, more fundamental than we have ever understood. And Veda Austin, her wonderful work, refers to water as God consciousness. And I'm absolutely with her on that. But I think where I'm at is water is absolutely everything. Nothing, no life exists without water. And water simply takes different forms. As we know, it can be steam, it can be ice, it can be liquid. But it's even bigger than that. But water is source itself, with a capital S, that has the divine intelligence to manifest into all these different fractals, expressions of the one consciousness. But it's something also to do with the movement of water through the heart. I think, and I haven't cracked this, and I'm not a scientist. I don't have a scientific background at all. But there's something to do with the structure of the heart and the way water moves through the heart. I'm on that rabbit trail right now. I haven't got a neat conclusion, a neat phrase.
It's really interesting. I'm interviewing another gentleman named Konstantin Korotkov, who I've had on the podcast a few times, and he's been the gentleman responsible for helping Joe Dispenza and Lynn McTaggart. I don't know if you know Lynn's work, The Power of Intention.
Yeah, yeah, he works very well. And Joe,
he creates all the
one of his workshops. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So he creates all the scientific sensors that can actually measure the powers of intention and all this sort of stuff that actually picks up on. And his body of work is specifically around picking up electromagnetic frequencies from the work of intention. And also the other half of his work is water. So it's very interesting hearing you share about both of those things, because he is just completely down that rabbit hole. And yeah, just reflecting into what you were referring about the heart, like everything I learned from HeartMath as being a facilitator and a trainer for their work, it really flips a lot of, it flips so much of what we perceive as logic on its own head, because we generally put the center, the nucleus of all of our, even the word cognition, I'm afraid to sort of use it for just the mind now, but up here, you know, in the mind. And yet the heart is actually processing so much. If you learn to just, HeartMath just opens you up. It's like, hey, there's a computer down here. Have you paid attention to the fact that it's processing everything? And the minute you start going from there, at the risk of, oversharing, I actually have this trippy, dippy little experiment that I play with my son, who's 3 months old. And so there's very little language sort of being exchanged, right? But we communicate effortlessly. And I can sort of see it in him when I'm like sort of talking to him from up here. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, and he's like, eyes are darting. And the minute I just turn that off and I just communicate from down here, he's just happy. You just see it in him. He can feel it, yeah? He's 3 months, so no sense of eye really seems to have dropped in for him just yet. So he's just like, ah, heart. It's just this really, really touchwood, trippy, dippy, glorious experience that I'm just having an experiment for of my own. And yeah, really, thank you so much for sharing your rabbit holes and what you're exploring.
We've been so encouraged to live in the mind, haven't we?
Oh,
so encouraged. And also, just to say, we must take care moving forward, because Pluto just moved into Aquarius, Sedna into Gemini. Those are both air signs, which are head, intellect. So all of that, you know, information, technology, AI, that's going to be coming at us. So we have to be very conscious of, no, I'm going to live through the heart. No, I'm going to tune out the noise. No, this is my center that I operate from. But it has to be conscious, otherwise we could just be swept along with the nifty little gadgets that are coming along and forget to really live in connection with nature as well, nature and our hearts.
And I think that's really important, because one of the pieces of work that your work is an ode to as well is the word integration. And I think at that juncture we also run the risk of sort of, for those tuning in or even for myself, sort of going, oh, so this served us to hear and it's no longer any good, which I find that in coaching a lot of people go, oh, yeah, so this got me here, but it's not any good anymore. I've got to let go of that. And I oftentimes find myself sharing with people, actually, it's a path of integration. Like, that was great to get you here, but now we need to build on the next thing, you know, and maybe that folder can stay open, or maybe we just set it to archive. So if you ever need to reach for it, you can. But now we're building the next set of tools, right? I'd love to sort of get your thoughts on, because we're going through all these shifts, but everything that's sort of gone through for the last little while, even just the structures and the hierarchical structures and even the paternal structures, they've all served a purpose, right, to build us up to where we are now.
Yeah, and that's very clearly signed astrologically by Pluto moving out of the last few degrees of Capricorn. Capricorn is top-down structure. Historically, it might have been the church or an autocratic monarchy, and I've looked at those historical cycles. In today's world, it's governments, it's corporations, institutions that have held power over you, the elite, rich people telling the poor people what to do, and that's really just crumbling. And Pluto will only dart back into the last degree or two of Capricorn from the 2nd of September to the 19th of November, a sort of last gasp of the patriarchy of the old world, even though it'll be very loud at that time, be very loud but also very hollow, and recognize it will be loud but hollow. And then 19th of November, Pluto is fully in Aquarius for 20 years. And that's really the beginning of a shift of the power to the people, to a much more horizontal structure in society, grassroots up, communities, collaborations, people coming together as you know, a tribe, a soul tribe, one unified whole. So you know, historically, when I've looked at that, that as Pluto's moved out of Capricorn into Aquarius, which is the process we're in right now, there's been a total reformation around socio-economic and political structures. And that's what we're going to expect. So just let it crumble. Don't give life force, you know, don't give life support to what's dying, because it's meant to crumble. Astrologically, that's very clear. But so, yes, we're having to integrate these changes very quickly. But surrender, I would say, surrender to the energy, surrender to the light, surrender to the solar flares, because if we resist them, we're actually fighting against an evolutionary ingredient. So even if you can't sleep, welcome them in. Thank you, solar flares. Thank you for upgrading me, you know, even though you're ragged, you know, thank you. Try and welcome them all in, because we know we're on this fast track ascension is what we're experiencing. And you know, the end point of that is unimaginable, because we've never lived it before. We've never been in that state of being as humanity before. So it's allowing and surrendering and making it smooth, because anything that you resist will persist in an uncomfortable way. So that's my feeling. Try and just soften your response to things, soften your response to challenges, soften your response to physical disruptions like insomnia. Just try and soften your flow through life. And I use Ho'oponopono quite a lot to soften any, you know, any challenges with my local neighbor or whatever, that kind of thing. That works miraculously well.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I love that prayer. I found myself saying it today. It just naturally tumbled out. I love you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Please forgive me. I'm sorry. there's a particular point here where, yeah, there's this energy of learn to go with it a little bit more instead of forcing your way around, you know, so much. And there's a big part of, you've got a few golden rules, but one of the big ones is that everything's kind of happening for you. It's not happening to you. Can you help us unpack that a little bit? I think we've been speaking about it a little bit, but let's speak right to the heart of it.
Yeah, thank you for that. If you have a feeling that life is happening kind of at you, then you're straight into victim consciousness. You know, I'm always a loser, I always have these struggles, nothing really flows or works for me. If you can start to see, okay, if this was happening for me, what would the lesson be? So it gets you to think more deeply about whatever that particular experience is. Think more deeply about, I know there is a golden thread in this. You know there is something for my benefit. Now, what is it? Am I not being empowered enough or sovereign enough, or, you know, whatever it is? Am I going over the same old ground, old patterns, whatever it is? And once you perceive the lesson, you can easily see this is happening for me. Because if that experience hadn't happened, I might have missed that lesson. So it's that kind of shift from victim to empowerment and understanding the lesson by thinking more deeply. Because everything I think, almost the more uncomfortable the experience, the greater the teaching it will give you. You know, going through a marriage breakup or something, or an awful illness, you know, is pretty hideous. But so often people come out the other side. I mean, look at Joe Dispenza's work. You know, his spine was crushed. He was told he'd never walk again. He was going to have dozens of operations repeatedly on his spine. And look where he ended up in terms of that terrible event. But seeing it as this is happening for me in a way I can't fully perceive yet, but I'm not going to take the obvious conventional route. I'm going to dive deeper, which indeed he did. I think for about 9 weeks, he meditated on a perfect spine, and then it was completely healed. No surgery.
It's so incredible feeling into that. And also the concept of, yeah, we sort of touched off back off of water a little bit, but you mentioned water is God consciousness. Huh?
Yeah.
Can you help us unpack that a little bit further as well? Because I've read into some places where, yeah, water wasn't actually indigenous to Australia. sorry, I'm just thinking Australia, indigenous. They go hand in hand, those two words, very well together. Indigenous to Earth. And that actually it's sort of landed here. But also feeling into your work, you've described water as, yeah, it's coming from out there into in here as well. Can you unpack that a little bit further? Because, yeah, calling water capital S source is it's a bit of a big deal.
Oh, I think it's huge. And again, I think we're just on the edge of this. And again, to credit Vader, she's doing some beautiful work with this. Certainly, some of the water on Earth I already knew from digging around in research papers is 4.5 billion years old, billion, not million, that you and I are drinking today, Amrit. But when I spoke to Dr. Jude Caravan, who is a very much respected cosmologist, she said some of the water on Earth is older than our sun, older than our sun. And that's kind of, you know, kind of falls out of your ears. It's so old.
It's beyond boggling. Yeah, that's just...
But what's wonderful is that water is sort of coming down to us because stars apparently just kind of explode into water. They throw water into the atmosphere and that comes down to us. Everything filters down to us as rain. And of course, you drink it, I drink it, indigenous people, trees, slugs, snails, mosses, plants, animals. And it's a constant connector, recycled connector. And so it's a great unifier for humanity because we're all consuming the same water. And if we are by molecular count 99% water, then we are just bags of water, essentially, that is constantly being recycled. But water is also extremely sensitive in being imprinted. And Vader wouldn't want the word imprinted, I think, but imprinted by our thoughts. I mean, in her early work, she was doing very, like Masaru Emoto did as well, you know, send love to the water and you get beautiful crystallography, which is exquisite symmetry. If you send hate to water, it's all distorted and ugly patterns. So Masaru Emoto got that far. So Vader and her work has certainly sent ideas to water. And initially, yes, it was a kind of mirror response, but now she's actually having conversations with water. I think at one point she said to water, "Who are you?" And she got three letters, "I am." And she said, yeah, amazing. And, you know, "Who am I?" she said. And she got the crystal of exactly how she writes her initials, VA. And I think I'm representing her work correctly. So it isn't just a mirror image. There's a conversation that's happening with an intelligence that's being held in the water, an intelligence. So what is water? And we know that water holds memory. And so all of the ancient knowledge of ancient Lemuria, Atlantis, even perhaps before that, is still held in the water. So how do we start to access that ancient knowledge that you and I are drinking every day? What shift has to happen for us to get in touch with something that you just turn on a tap? How do we access that ancient knowledge that's held in the water that we know is held because the water holds memory? I mean, this
water is memory, yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, because water is memory. Sorry, I butted in on.
No, that's fine. I just think it's huge. You know, I just think we're on the brink of something absolutely gigantic in understanding our reality and our consciousness. And Veda is a real pioneer in this, of what actually is our reality. Are we simply fractals of the divine intelligence of water? And water is the original divine intelligence.
Hey there, guys. Quick question at this particular juncture. How do you perceive astrology when it comes to fatedness, free will, determinism? Is everything set in stone? How did your soul choose to be here? And did it pick with the stars alignment at the time? Man, such a rich conversation. I'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Let me know what your thoughts are. Back to today's episode.
That's a question, not a statement.
Yeah, there's a very inspired part of me that's visualizing, like, my children, instead of reading, hopefully they will read Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh, but then also reading, like, Conversations with Water.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, and it just...
Truly.
Yeah. And so there's also this phrase that we sort of get, like if all of humanity was a book and all of our existence was a book, we are literally in like what we currently see is, you know, the last couple of hundred years and the amount of technological innovation we've gone through is like a page compared to everything that we've previously experienced. And yet our biology has remained much the same up until this point. But then also, thankfully, hopefully today's conversation is illuminating for some of us that actually our biology is existing not just as this standalone sort of piece of machinery. It's actually receiving a lot of cosmic intelligence at all times, upgrades, inputs, outputs, and all this sort of, yeah, we're much larger than we think we are, and we're also much more insignificant than we think we are in other ways as well, which you got to love how the left brain logic mind really struggles with that. But that to sort of say, with all the advancements coming through, back to what you're referring to about the Lemurians, because it is hard to visualize where we're going, is that the closest sort of pairing in your mind for where you think what it's going to look like? Or can you speak to what you potentially feel like the future might look like?
It is. Yeah, it is, because that, as I understand it, was the most beautiful, harmonious, loving civilization that existed. As I understand it, Atlantis got into a bit of trouble with incorporating technology and blending technology with humanity. I believe I'm correct in saying that, but I'm not an expert on Atlantis. But the wonderful thing about Lemuria is that they lived in this state of oneness. They lived in a state of harmony with nature, harmony with the cosmos, harmony with all living beings, respect for all living beings. You know, it would be impossible to hurt another living being. It would be impossible to have a war, just unthinkable to have a war, because you live in love. That's where we've got to get to. So, you know, the terrible atrocities that are happening in wars today, which is just absolutely incredible in this 21st century, but it isn't the people that drive the wars, it's the leaders that drive the wars. But we have to get to a state of consciousness where that is just unimaginable. And we're not doing that. Nobody's turning up. Nobody's going. War isn't going to happen. That's where we've got to get to. And that's my aim with my work, in whatever small way I can. If I can help people get to that point using astrology as my language, then that's my legacy. And I will feel very happy with that legacy. I feel quite emotional now, but I will feel very happy with that legacy. But it's a great question, Amrit, because some of it is just because we've never, ever lived to the degree that we are going to live, I think, even 10 years down the road. And we're going to get bigger and bigger glimpses of this as we move forwards, particularly 2025 and onwards, bigger and bigger ideas. But we are also creating it as we go. We are creating the higher timelines as we go for a consciousness that has never existed to the level I believe it will. So we've got no reference point. You know, so Lemuria is as good as I can do today, but I think it's going to go galactic in a much. We are going to reconnect to our galactic families in a bigger way than we have done in eons. And that's really exciting, because in those simple 15-minute meditations on a Sunday evening, more and more people are seeing that hundreds of tall, loving galactic beings are coming in to support our efforts to create a better world, to create a new earth. And that's, you know, and so many people are having these synchronicities, the same visions, the same images. You know, it's really beautiful, really moving, actually.
And the beings arrive when our receptivities are open to them, I'm probably imagining. And then in there, there's something that you hold really dear, and actually I share a kinship for it, but I'd love to sort of hear your thoughts on this concept of holding sacred space, because it is, yeah, I feel like it is one of the most loving acts you can do, and the segue is that we're talking about love, so that's where it came from me. Sorry, I probably need to articulate that a little bit. But yeah, I'll stop articulating there and let you pick it up from there.
Yeah, and it's something that's sort of grown over time. It's a lovely question, Amrit, because I instantly think of the archetype of Chariclo, who was the wife of Chiron in myth, and she is very related, I believe, to that Buddhist silent eternal state of being. She's very related to helping in the transitions from life to death, moving the soul on, you know, through the death process, but she's also very present in transitions of consciousness. And I remember as a younger astrologer, if I had a client, I don't do client work anymore, I don't have time, but the young, you know, when I was younger, I'd be so excited about the astrology that I'd try and point things out to clients. Look, it's a Uranus square your sun. That's why this is happening. Like, but actually, it's much more effective to let that land in the client's own consciousness than me trying to dictate it to them. So as the time went on, I realized it was much more helpful for the client if I just asked questions about particular kind of inner processes and experiences they'd had at particular times in their life, particular dates when I could see Uranus was clear, their sun, for instance, and just sit and wait almost for the penny to drop. And you could almost feel the kind of clunk, 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 you know, as they went through those processes, thinking, my God, yeah, that's the same pattern as that, and the same pattern as that. And that, you know, I was abandoned then, I was abandoned then, I was fired then, my husband left me then. Boom. Same pattern repeated over and over again, and I went into victim. So just by, you know, it took more skill and maturity, but by asking the questions and making it specific to time periods and events, you just could then sit there as a holding vessel. And that's one of the greatest powers of astrology, I think, to help the client see in their own unconscious what's maybe been running in their life for many decades, and they suddenly see it with clarity. And therefore, they've shifted to a higher perspective, a higher frequency, in order to see that, that they couldn't see before. That's one of the many, many, many great benefits of astrology, I think.
You mentioned the word unconscious, and it pulled at this thread for me that I never really realized Carl Jung was an astrologer until I came across your work.
Yeah, yeah, he did it all the time because it gave him a shortcut to his client's psyche. You know, he was a bit of a cheat, actually, because he didn't go public on it. He kept it quiet because he thought it would discredit him. But yeah, he used to use charts all the time for his clients and think, yep, he's got Pluto conjunct her sun. That's the issue. And he also used the symbolism of the archetype very strongly. You know, he'd ask about the client's dreams, for instance, patient's dreams, simply using the mythology and the astrology. And he'd get sort of much quicker fixes, as it were, because it gave him the shortcut to the psyche. And that's what your birth chart does. And, you know, it's just always fascinating for me that, yes, it's a map of the heavens at the moment of your birth, but it's also, it's your inner imprint in your heart, I believe, for this lifetime.
And the more I tune into that, it feels like we all go get these, people have heard of the Enneagram, it's a few hundred years old. We've got the Myers-Briggs. Maybe a few decades. And there's all these sort of personality profiling tools that can be super useful in and around the workplace that we use. And yet I think just because of the left brain logic, back to what we were saying before, I think people forget that this is a similar, you know, profiling tool, but it's also like it is the profile of your potential, you know, and I think it's really a beautiful way to remember it. And it's been, you know, long before we had some of these left brain logic, like put you in this in, it's like, actually, this is your chart and this is what you can make of it, you know? And that's just to sort of say, like, if in the Myers-Briggs I get a certain personality spun up, like it gives me like, you know, 8 to 16 different careers that are good for my particular type of personality. And that's just my personality, let alone like, you know, my makeup on a DNA level, which, you know, there's plenty of questions to be asked about there, some of the DNA upgrades we're getting. But also just to bring it back to the profiling sense, like it can be so useful to go, oh yeah, like that's potentially what's available for me. And that kind of looks like what I want to do here, or kind of looks like what I want to do with that. So, you know, it can be so useful to remember that, to just, yeah, open yourself up to what's possible in terms of where we, I think, we don't necessarily end at our skin, you know, and so many of us sort of see ourselves that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's interesting talking about Myers-Briggs. It's a process I used to use in my work, you know, in a previous lifetime, as it were, it seems like. And so, but that's a kind of very much a personality imposition. You are this type. I am telling you, as a result of what you filled in on this form, you are this type. Astrology, as I'd like to see it being used, and many astrologers share my views on this, is this is your potential. What can you grow from this, rather than this is what you are? It shouldn't define you and therefore limit you by the consciousness of the astrologer. It should share your potential like seeds in a garden and say, okay, how are you going to grow into this magnificent Dharma that you are meant to grow into in this lifetime? And it's soul-based. And by the way, it's a continuation of your soul's tapestry, your thread through many, many lifetimes. So it's way bigger and it's way deeper, I think.
Isn't that so good? Because yeah, that's what I was gonna allude to. Like the Myers-Briggs was like, yeah, some of the, you know, that the Jesuits said it, like, you show me the boy before the age of seven and I'll show you the man. Pardon the stereotypizing of a particular gender there. But nonetheless, you know, I think that's where some of these personality tools currently live. But yeah, like you said, this is your soul potentially chose to come through at this particular time from that sea of potential into probability and experience all this stuff, you know? And it's, and then, yeah, I was waiting for the word Dharma to arrive. Here it is. How has astrology informed, that's such a loose question, but I'm going to ask it. How has astrology informed you on your Dharma?
Oh, massive, you know, beyond words. I don't know who I'd be without astrology. I honestly don't know how I would have made sense of my life, my childhood, my, you know, subsequent relationships, whatever. I think I just don't know where I'd be. I mean, I'm so grateful to it. I'm so grateful to it for, on so many levels, on a practical level, you know, I've got a constant daily weather forecast, as it were. Not that I have time to check my own chart these days. I'm too busy doing other things. But on a practical level, on a guidance level, on a soul purpose level, on a service to others level, on a connecting with previous lifetimes, of course, all time is happening now, but previous lifetimes that were leaking through into this lifetime and understanding those enriched my life immensely. And I track them down using the astrology, particularly the nodal axis. And they were enriching beyond words. And so my life is so full, so purposeful, and so meaningful, and I feel very humbled that I was able to come across astrology. I think almost it was given to me by an earth angel, that big Jamaican chap in the yoga class. He disappeared soon after, and I think he was just meant to pop up in the yoga class and reconnect me to this subject.
Wasn't his name Star or something?
Yeah, it was Asta. I still remember it. I was 21. Asta, which is quite close to Astra for Star. It was just crazy. And he disappeared. And I think he was just a reconnector. And I could not be more grateful to astrology for all the gifts it's given me. It's enabled me to have a much bigger, happier, meaningful life than ever would have been possible without it. I mean, maybe I would have stumbled across something else, but I think this was very much my fated path, as it were. My dharmic path.
As you're referring to, Asta, for those people that are interested to try and learn more about astrology, maybe it's a nice juncture to also point people to some of the references that exist in your ecosystem. What's the best place for people to start learning and picking at some threads so that they can, yeah, come to the work in the way that you champion?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, simple things. I've got several training videos on my website, pamgregory.com. They go from beginners to advanced. Another, actually a very good resource is just to watch astrologers on YouTube that you feel attracted to, that resonate. That's a good starting point. There's a very good teaching resource called Astrology University. That's all online. That's run very well by Tony Howard. I believe the London School of Astrology, run by the brilliant Frank Clifford, that's now fully online. I studied with the Faculty of Astrological Studies for a part-time for the first 8 years before I did my master's. That's very kind of traditional old school astrology, but very much respected and now online. My good friend Kathy Rose does do some classes as well. You contact her in the US. So there are a lot of rich resources, actually. and more coming online, because I think astrology is coming into a kind of spiritual maturity in these times. And so from a period in history where it's been kind of cast to the periphery as not being logical or not working on gravity, so how can it possibly work? And, you know, it was kind of, it just became almost a sort of backroom readings for people, you know, it lost its status from the great status that it had in ancient times. I think it's going to come back because of the connection to science and spirituality, which we're experiencing at the moment. And I think it's going to find its heart back in that connection because it straddles both science and spirituality.
It really does live in between the Venn diagram of the two, right? That space gets colored in quite well with astrology there. The how much of what you've just shared do you think is attributed to the current, there seems to be a collective crisis in meaning that we're going through on quite a global sort of level. How much of that do you attribute the resurgence of this, like our openness to astrology, to the current crisis in meaning that we're experiencing?
Yeah, I think people are really looking for meaning. And I mean, I'm not surprised if you're watching the news every night, you know. If I was doing that, I'd be looking for meaning too, because it looks hopeless. It looks overwhelming. There's so many problems on a war level, disease, death, poverty, you know, terrible things happening to nature, pollution, crisis. I'd be depressed. I mean, thank goodness for astrology, I'd be depressed. So there's a greater search for meaning. And so you have to find your way through that. You know, is it astrology that you're drawn to? Is it healing? Is it some different kind of modality? You know, I'm not saying astrology is for everyone at all, but it's very important, I think, that people have a connection to a meaningful life, because all these kind of polycrises, together with the rapid technological advances, can easily, and the last 4 years in particular, can easily tip people into mental illness. And mental instability, and all the solar flares too. You know, there's so much coming at us energetically. That's why we've got to have a very strong center, I think, of meaning and of sovereignty to navigate these times. So you have to find a modality that will work for you to do that. Mine is astrology, but it's going beyond that now, as I say, to other areas.
And when we talk about the center, I feel like we can, like you said before, predict the weather, predict the winds a little bit, looking at how things are moving around, you know, so that, okay, maybe I need to dig my heels in a little bit deeper, you know, or this is a great time to get out and get some sun and just jump around, you know.
Yeah, 100%. It's been a very good sort of teacher for me. I mean, remember, you know, my years in the corporate world, and when it was incredibly hard work, you know, you were working way past midnight every night, 7 days a week, incredible. But if it was a period of Saturn, I knew I would get my reward at the end, and then I'd always get the promotion at the end because I'd followed the principle of Saturn. Whereas if it was a Uranus transit, that's the worst thing you can do. You've got to kind of buck the system, be more creative, be more maverick. So if you behave during a Saturn transit as if you are having a Uranus transit, it won't work well. Equally, if you're having a Uranus transit, be creative, you know, bunk off work early, go and do something really different. But you're actually having a Saturn transit, that's a disaster because you're likely to get fired. You know, so understand the archetypal meaning is really helpful in terms of strategically running your life. It's a very helpful tool, I think.
Thank you so much for pointing us to so many great resources earlier as well for us that want to, dig in deeper. I'm conscious we're slowly coming to a close. The overarching myth of most mankind does seem to fall into this hero's journey, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it does feel like a lot of us live out this hero's journey. We go through some real significant challenge. We slay the dragon and the sword. We come back and slay the dragon with. We're like, look, check out this sword. It's amazing. And that if we can learn to serve that to our community, it's a really incredible, incredible gift. Do you see that myth playing out, and then all these other myths of all these incredible stories on an interstellar level? And you can't, obviously they do get written, but you can't write stories like some of these myths. And you just like, oh my God, they're just so fascinating to feel into. How do you see the interplay between the myth of the individual that we're living out in the story of our life and the interplay between the myths of the gods and the heavens and the stars?
Yeah, I think all of us in our lives go through some dark night of the soul at some point. You know, we absolutely do. But it's necessary not only because it teaches us a lot, but it makes us live at a deeper level. You know, if we just cruise through happy, happy, happy all the time, we don't necessarily develop the depth and the empathy that will make us a fuller person, perhaps, and help us also to have a deeper and more meaningful life. But I think we are, in some respects, going through, yes, a collective dark night of the soul. You know, the old paradigm is collapsing, the old world, the old systems, and because that's all we've ever known, the structures in our lives. Long-term structures. You had a long-term job for life. You bought a house. You stayed in the house long term. You know, those long-term things that seemed very reliable and unchangeable, they are all crumbling now. They are all crumbling. So we are going to go through a period where the world, you know, the world is moving, the ground is moving very fast under our feet. And that's why we have to go through this process to dive deeper and find our own center, like a radio dial inside you. That's your sovereignty, your center. And every morning when I get up, I decide to live in love today. I decide to live in joy. I decide to live from my heart today. And I do, because that sets my tone for the day. So I decide. I'm not going to have the news telling me how my day is going to run. You know, I'm going to decide. So stepping into that sense of sovereignty, but also I think the multi-crises we're going through at the moment will really help people connect with the rest of humanity. Nobody wants war. Nobody wants poverty. Nobody wants disease. Every single human being pretty much can agree with that. We are going to come together with much greater heart compassion as one humanity as a result of all of this stuff that we're currently going through. The stuff has purpose, even though it's jolly uncomfortable at times.
Well, Pam, I have three really quick sort of rapid-fire questions. They are quite large by their nature, so maybe designed to be answered intuitively, if that's okay, as we wrap things up. What is your definition of living a good life?
Yeah, living in love, living in your heart, living in your dharma, and always being kind.
Yeah, I know they're meant to be rapid fire, but there's a piece of your wisdom that I carry with me, which is, just to leave every interaction, if you can, enriching the other person for the better.
Yeah, always leaving people.
Like your champion for kindness.
Yeah,
is awesome. Just yeah.
Because every single interaction you have, even with a person in a shop, you know, are you leaving them better than you found them? Did you smile? Did you lift their day just 1%? Try and make it a principle of your life that you always leave people better than you found them. That's how I try and live anyway.
I love that. How do you define God?
I think it could be the water. I think it could be the water. It's a divine, it's not an old bloke with a beard and a stick. It's a divine intelligence that is sentient, that impregnates everything, that is encased in everything, everything in our lives, everything that's living. It's that sense. It's an exquisite, sentient, divine intelligence, and it's extremely loving. That is part of every living being. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much. And what is the ultimate dharma? What is the ultimate purpose of life, in your opinion?
I think just to love. Just think to love, live in love. Yeah, I think so.
Thank you so much for today's episode and this conversation. It is, as prescribed, it was always going to be multidimensional. And also I get the incredible opportunity to thank you for today's conversation. And yet, you know, it's just a moment in time. You know, this stands on the shoulders of, you know, 45 years of your commitment to the path that you're on, and, you know, the numerous upon numerous teachers that have informed you along your way as well. And, you know, we stand on the shoulders of all of that in today's conversation. So just, yeah, taking a moment to really acknowledge you for who you are, and just really deep, deep gratitude for you, Pam. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you.
Oh, bless you, Amrit. I take that very much to heart, and thank you. I'm very touched by that. And I've loved it. You asked very different questions. So, yeah, that made me dig a bit deeper. So, yeah, I've loved it. And thank you for all that you are doing out in the world. Your work is a big contribution to this evolutionary shift that we're going through. So thank you for everything you're doing too.
Thank you for your blessings. Hey, your Inspired Tribe, I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart, and it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders, and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper, and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, The Inspired Evolution Tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, Tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving. Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.